Hey, what's up? I'm Gautam Sharma, and you're listening to the Access Cyber Podcast. On the show today, my guest, Mr. Chris Roberts. Chris is an information security researcher whose work I've been following for a long time. It's very hard to describe sort of the essence of the spirit that is Chris Roberts, but I think we got to some of that in this conversation. Take a look, take a listen, enjoy. Chris Roberts, welcome to the show. I am super excited to have you here. Thanks for joining me.
Of course. No, thanks for having me. It's always fun. These are fun things to do.
I've been following your work for a number of years now, and you've been covered by a number of tech publications, security publications. It's hard to be in the security community and not know who Chris Roberts is. The headline I saw recently said, I got bored, so I hacked NASA.
Yeah, I get yelled at for doing that on a regular basis. But it is like that. It's like you always want to wonder how things work. And sometimes you just don't get the answers that you want. So you just wander off and go do it yourself.
For sure. So relatable to me. I'm sure we can swap stories for days. When I think Chris Roberts, I think whiskey. I think the beard. I think great graphics on LinkedIn for articles. I think someone who is not afraid to be vocal about the problems in our industry. Who are you, Chris?
Probably all of those and more. I think it's totally day dependent, amount of sleep dependent, and whatever is going through, whatever muse is sitting over the shoulder at the time, I think sometimes.
And whichever muse we summon, right, in different states that we exist in.
Oh my gosh. It's interesting. LinkedIn is probably the perfect example for this because I've been using it now for, you know, the last several years. For whatever reason, whoever is keeping an eye over my shoulder is definitely doing an amazing job of just dropping some interesting insights and commentary and conversations into the head that I can then, you know, just take and mold. And then, you know, to your point, spend God knows how long trying to find the bloody graphics on the internet to match what I'm trying to say.
Let me start with a confession. Other people are guilty of this, but I am also guilty of this. On LinkedIn sometimes, I will tag you in sort of random shit that is vaguely cyber related.
Yep.
We know how the algorithms work.
Yep.
You know, a like from you will kind of propel the post in the spotlight. But also because I'm generally curious about your thoughts on things.
How do you manage to stay on top of all of that?
It's tough. It is actually tough. And I have dedicated time I put aside on the calendar to try and keep up with it. Because to your point, I watched the calendar. I mean, I got up this morning and I have 20 something odd messages, 42 notifications, 8 new in the network, plus a bunch of others. And that's since 5 o'clock this morning. And right. So, you know, I put a LinkedIn post out last night. I was a little growly. Normally I try to just do, to your point, the algorithms are actually stacked against people doing lots and lots of stuff. So I try to post once a day and I'm very careful with the posts on, you know, not putting external links in because that kills the algorithm and all sorts of other things. To your point, there's definitely some stuff in there, but this was like post number 3 of the day because I just saw something that just drove me nuts. And, you know, it's sitting at 7,000 or 8,000, 9,000 people have hit it so far. And there's 40 odd comments. And I'm like, I'm going to respond to them all. Normally, I can get through them pretty quickly. Sometimes when I'm on other meetings, I'll confess that one. But there are times I'll sit down at night or I'll sit down when I am having my lunch. I have dedicated time I take for breakfast and for lunch in my calendar. And so I'll normally sit down here with lunch and I'll open up LinkedIn at that point and actually engage again then.
It's impossible to do without a system, right? This stuff can devour your life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to your point, I mean, I could spend, I do probably spend more time on there than I probably need to or should do. But there are times when I'm, you know, my calendar starts at 8:30 in the morning, get up, have breakfast. 9 o'clock in the morning is typically first meetings. I've got a half hour break in for lunch and then I down tools at 6 o'clock or thereabouts. I take 3 hours break. So to hang here at the house, to relax, to eat, to kick back with the dogs. And then I'm back at it at about 9 o'clock at night. And I'm normally going till 2 o'clock in the morning. And that's basically my schedule.
Are there certain, wind up or wind down routines that you're following that are helpful?
Wind down's a tough one. And I'm probably the worst one at that one. I have a, you know, again, I have a calendar invite that's down keyboard at 2 o'clock in the morning. Normally at about 1 o'clock, I try and take a brain's gone to sleep. What the hell is a stupid thing called? The stuff to calm the brain down. Melatonin. There we go. I'll take a melatonin to try and actually calm things down a little bit. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, this morning I finished at 5 o'clock. I was working till, I actually took a bit of a break at about 12:30 and then got back to it about 1:30. I actually just hung out with the dog for a bit and got back to it about 1:30, down till at about 4 o'clock this morning and went to bed about 5-ish. You know, I'm doing some work on the brain and some other interesting stuff on the EEG side of the world. And, you know, it's kind of fun. It's interesting. It's also bloody frustrating. There is, you know, there is a part of me. This is a fun life. Don't get me wrong. It's a hard life. It's a fun life, but there is definitely a part of me that actually envies people who go into work at, you know, 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, finish at 5. And when they walk out of the door, they're done. You know, the rest of their time is theirs to do what they want, whether it be sit there and, you know, veg out in the television, be it other things. I should do better at calling quits on things, but I'm not good at that. I have the weekends for that, but I also have a bit of an envy, honestly, for people that have chosen or they have a simpler way of approaching work because that suits them. And I think I could do it for about a month, maybe, and then I would probably scream and, you know, I'd go nuts.
I mean, this whole pandemic stuff, right? I didn't realize how many events and meetings and conferences I was going to until I was told that's it, no more.
Yes, I similar thing. I think last year I did 45 or 49 trips last year for conferences and for meetings and stuff like that. And I'll be honest, I mean, this year, what's ended up happening, exactly to your point, I mean, everything just nixed. I have stuff set up that might or might not happen, but almost everything has just gone online. And now I find myself doing like 2 or 3 like webinars on a weekly basis. So, you know, it's just all shifted. And in essence, you know, I miss it and I don't miss it. I miss the human thing. We had a conversation last night about this on the Security Shit Show, and Ryan's right. The human connection in a 3D manner is so much more rich and in depth than we get through like a computer screen. But I don't mind it. I don't miss all the freaking airports at times. I got to be honest.
Right. I mean, the other thing is now I have to go and buy my own socks, right? I don't have security companies
making me socks all the time. T-shirts. For me, it was always T-shirts. It's right. Like, damn it. You know, it's I'm wearing the same one today that I put on like yesterday afternoon. I'm like, you know, if anybody sees me on a webinar with the same damn T-shirt I wore yesterday, they're going to think I'm a complete freaking hobo.
You shared a post a few weeks ago, maybe. Time is weird now. Great picture of your mother and your brother, I believe.
No, my brother from another mother. That would actually, Jesse is a true blood Nebraskan. So that's actually my mother. It's outside of Stonehenge. And yeah, he and I were there a couple of years ago. He'd never been out of the country. So we got him a passport sorted out. And Jesse is part of the research company that I have behind the scenes, Hillbilly Hit Squad. And yeah, he'd never been out of the country. So I took him to the UK. We actually were over in Norway. He and I gave a talk over in Norway. And we hit the UK, then took him up to Scotland, which was fantastic. And, you know, a Nebraskan boy, you know, he's bigger than I am. I mean, he makes me look small. He's 6'5" or something and got some weight more than I have and broader shoulders. And I mean, yeah, him and I wandering our way through Glasgow was absolutely fantastic.
It's so important to see like the human side of people. We always see their professional side and the side kind of, you know, the side that for the sake of career preservation and all that stuff, we have to present a professional meeting, right? Is the way I think about it.
I'll go with Anish on that one. Let's face it. I mean, again, you're talking to me. This is the person that, yeah, but you're right. It was nice. I mean, mum's fantastic. She's freaking amazing. I mean, she's put up with me for crying out loud. I mean, let's face it.
It's for sure. I mean, God bless them, right? I mean, all our mothers.
Oh, my gosh. My poor mother. I mean, the first time the police ever came to the door, she just opened the door and she just turned around. She's like, Christopher, I think they're here for you.
What was that first incident? What were they there for?
14 or 15. I was like turning 15 or something like that. Well, I'd had a run-in with the police a number of times beforehand. So my father came out of the British military. And so we were stationed in Sardinia. And I ended up coming back to the UK for a boarding school. And so I had a couple of run-ins with the police at boarding school because boarding school and I did not get on with each other in any way, shape, or form. So I ran away a number of times and got a couple of good rides in the police car. But this was, I was 14 or 15 and my parents had split up and I wasn't overly happy with that situation. And I blamed my father for it. So I ended up getting into the bank that he had his bank account in and moved money from his account into an account in my name, you know, being the master criminal, covering my tracks like absolutely nothing at all.
Where did the knowledge to do that come from?
Purely just online bulletin boards and digging. I mean, you know, this is really how a hacker works. It's looking at something, it's trying to understand it, it's doing whatever research was available. And I mean, you know, this is 1984, 85 timeframe. So early days of bulletin boards. And then, you know, the movie War Games actually was one of the inspirations, because at that time, I was dialing each freaking number by hand with the modem, which, as you can imagine, isn't the funnest. And then War Games comes along and, you know, Broderick or whoever is sitting there, I'm like, holy shit, I could actually put these in a file and just have them auto-dial each other. Yes!
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, it was that. And then, you know, obviously those were the early days. So we were taking over, you know, British Telecom's bulletin boards, 3Com's boards, IBM's. And, you know, getting into some interesting conversations with the CDC folks.
And I'm sure that wasn't the last time the cops showed up.
No. Had a couple of other interesting conversations with them over the years. You know, it's part of the reason I ended up doing some of the work I did. I one other time I remember walking, this is early days, you know, this is, you know, you're so full of piss and vinegar when you're young, that I remember working for a company and, you know, I'm training all their people and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm training them. I'm amazing. I'm doing all these wonderful things. And I'm like, why am I being paid less than them? And, you know, I'd figured it out because I'd listened and all this kind of stuff. So I ended up getting into the HR database, freaking IBM mainframe or ICL mainframe, I think probably back in those days. Got into the database, dumped the config out, printed it out to a dot matrix printer and walked into my boss's office. And pretty much I demanded to know why I was being paid less than everybody else. And, you know, when he's like, well, how do you know this? I just handed him the printout. So not the smartest move on the planet. That didn't end too well either. So, and then, you know, another couple of years later, you know, fast forward, I think I was probably 17 or so at the time. And we got yelled at because people wouldn't listen to us. So we shifted a large quantity of money around the country that we probably shouldn't have shifted around the country. And yeah, that was another one of those interesting moves.
Do you think those antics were sort of necessary to get you where you are today?
I think it did. Yeah. And, you know, it's sometimes positive, sometimes not so. And I think it's, I mean, especially the US. I mean, I'm in the US because of, I went into the British military and jumped out of airplanes for a living for an extended period of time. Came out of active service, went into the reserves, and very quickly got back into this industry. You know, and again, this industry being IT and still the very early days of it. And at the time, Y2K was, you know, everybody was running around going, we have, you know, 2 or 3 years before the entire world blows up. Therefore, we're going to get our shit together. So got back into it again, did a whole lot of stuff, and then ended up in the US in 98 because of one of those particular antics. And I mean, I've been here ever since. It's tough, though. I mean, we were able to get away with a lot of it back then. And this day and age, they'll throw the book at you. And I think there's more. We have a better mechanism. So perfect example. I mean, you look at the likes of BugCrowd and HackOne. When you find a vulnerability these days, there is a mechanism for disclosure. You know, you can actually go to, you know, Casey and the crew over at BugCrowd or Hanek and the crew over at like HackOne. You can go to DHS. You can go to NKIX. You can go to, there are a number of places you can go if you don't want to call the company up directly and actually work with somebody to disclose stuff. Whereas back then it was the wild, wild freaking West. I mean, we were finding flaws in all sorts of shit. And unfortunately the companies either wouldn't listen, couldn't listen, didn't know how to respond. And you know, you went off in your merry way.
Mm-hmm. And do you think like platforms, like you're describing the BugCrowds and the HackerOnes, what role do you think they're playing in de-incentivizing cybercrime?
I don't know if they're de-incentivizing it. It's tough. I mean, that I think is going to take a huge shift for a whole bunch of reasons. I think what they're doing is they're giving a better outlet. You know, if you think about it, if I'm sitting here in front of my computer and I'm like, I want to break shit. Great. I mean, we'll do, let's face it. But why do I want to do it? Well, I want to do it because I want to figure out how it works. I want to reverse engineer it. I want to understand what makes something tick. Well, now, you have an outlet. And especially if you're coming up through the industry, you know, we all talk about this. How do you bring people into the industry? How do people get recognized? And for me, that's a really, really nice avenue. It's the same stuff. One of the companies I'm working with now is Semperis. We're setting up a research lab for anything to do with Active Directory and any kind of AD-ish, authentication-ish related stuff. And to me, that's splendid. I mean, it's great because now you give people an outlet. You give them a target. You give them an outlet. You tell them, go have at it in a controlled manner. And you can help them understand what they can do with it. You can give them a platform to show others how they research, what use they, how useful they are. Whereas back then, you really didn't have that. You know, the stunt hacking, I don't necessarily agree with, says the guy who, you know, has done enough of it, let's face it. But you've got to be careful about it. And if you, I think part of it is, why are you doing it? For me, it's, you know, as much as the aviation stuff is still actually hurting me today from financial stuff and things like that, it was a necessary evil because, you know, you have two of the biggest companies on the planet who provide those weren't listening. And at some point, you just got to go public with it and say, you don't want to listen, your asses. And so that's what ended up happening. Mm-hmm. You know, and but then the flip side is you have companies like General Motors and Tesla who stand up and go, look, we want to know what the hell is going on with our vehicles. And we will work with the community. You know, we will outreach. We will do everything we can. Freaking Tesla. Hey, here's a car. Break the freaking thing and help us understand. I mean, you got to give them kudos for doing that. And GM's the same way. I mean, they approached Jesse and I and a couple of others back in, you know, early 2010s and said, look, you bunch of pain in the asses. We need to understand what the hell's going on. And you're the asses at the tip of the spear. Therefore, can we work together? You've got to give them credit for doing that. And so, you know, when that happens, you hunker down, you shut up in the public space and you just, and you collaborate with them. And I think that's, there's some amazing examples of that working well. And unfortunately, there's some terrible examples of when it goes horribly wrong.
But you spoke about the 80s, right? The mid 80s, when, you know, there wasn't really a formal pathway into the field of security. What do you think yeah. are the options now that exist? And is there like a good way to get into this field?
I think that there's less, but it's, what's the best way of putting this? I think there are plenty of resources out there for people to learn from. Let's put it that way. I mean, Katia, who is absolutely amazing. I'm just trying to remember. Katia Dean. She's absolutely fantastic. She's done, I mean, she's written books on this stuff. The same as Hack for Pancakes, Leslie, the same as Renee. This, I mean, there are a ton of people out there who have put some amazing, I guess, pathways out there for people to understand how to get into this industry. But I think also it is tough because, you know, there's so many of these, you know, I mean, shit, I got hit up one by the McAfee Institute for crying out loud. That's like, hey, for $1,000 and unlimited access, we'll get you, we'll guarantee you an access into this industry. And I'm like, you asses, you know, I hate you for doing that. Because there's so much data out there. I mean, LinkedIn's one avenue. Obviously, Peerlist is another one where they have a wealth of information that's just freely available for you to learn. You know, you can build your own home lab. You can find out if you want to be a reverse engineer or an analyst, or if you want to work in the sock of the knock or want to be a programmer or take your pick from any one of a ton of different avenues. So I think that's there. And a lot of companies are crying out for good people. Now, the problem is we as an industry need to do a better job with human resources in helping to get them on board with, we'll take apprenticeships, we'll take junior people that don't have a CISSP and we'll train them. So I think that gap, there's a big gap between coming out of school or informal learning and actually getting into maybe an analyst position. We've got to do a better job of breaking that barrier down.
We see statistics all the time about how big like the skills gap is, right? Between the number of positions that needs to be filled and the shortage, sort of the shortage of people who can do those jobs. Is there a certain personality type or characteristics that a person might have who would be attracted to this kind of work?
Oh, you know, that's tough. I would have said absolutely, maybe a few years ago, because we were still very much, you know, an industry of hackers, to want a better way of putting it. But we have diversified so much insofar as like where we touch. I mean, if you think about it, we have everything from, you know, the amazing research laboratories that are out there, that are doing are really on the forefront of anything from like malware research, future research, IoT, SCADA, you name it, it's out there. So you have some amazing like data scientists all the way through to human reverse engineers, technical engineers, hardware engineers. Then you have, you know, the pen testing, the assessment side, which definitely takes a special snowflake to some degree. And then you've got people who are like, look, I just want to get in and get my job done and get the hell out of there. So you have that entire area of the SOC and the NOC to some degree. You have the compliance side of the world. You have the business integration. I think what we are missing mostly is our bridge back to the industry. We don't have good people coming in from like a business side who really actually truly understand how a business works. We got some freaking amazing geeks and some amazing people who are on the spectrum, but what we don't have are people who fundamentally understand how business works so that when we find a flaw, we can talk to the organization as a business, not as another geek coming to the table. I think that's a big part of it. And then honestly, you know, the way we're moving with business, I mean, there's an organization I'm working with now where we're looking at actual proper artificial intelligence and machine learning and robotics, and we're building some frameworks around it. I look at that and I'm like, I actually don't want another geek. I actually want psychologists. I want human engineers. I want people who understand what makes society tick. I don't want another geek. I sure as hell don't know, you know, I mean, what am I like, 49, almost 50? I don't want another old white male sitting next to me working on this. You know, I want somebody who is not me working on this because I have to have that diversity of opinion and views. This industry definitely brings in all sorts of people who, you know, when we first started, let's face it, we were the misfits. I mean, let's just be perfectly fucking honest and blunt on this one. We were definitely those who did not want to come in an 8 to 6 or 9 to 5. We sure as hell didn't want to wear our suits all the time. And we had inquiring minds that regularly did not fit in with what corporate America or corporate Europe was. And so this industry came out of that. And we've done great and we've done some amazing things. But the problem is, you know, we have absolute power. If you really come and think about it, what we have control of today from IT and information security is nigh on freaking everything on this planet. With that absolute power comes responsibility. And we haven't, I don't think we fully understood how to deal with that effectively.
Agreed. You're always vocal about these things. You're not one to shy away from saying the things that need to be said. If you could snap your finger today, right now, right here, and make one security problem go away, what would that be?
I think it would have to be it. So it's a toss up. So I'm not sure which one I'd want to do more. I think I'd want to either passwords. So one part of my snap finger, I'd have to figure this one out. One of the snap fingers would be passwords. The ability for us to identify who we are in a digital transaction we have not solved. We've got some amazing stuff that we're doing on there. Ethopass, TrueSonar, and some other folks are doing some really, really cool stuff. Some stuff I'm working on with actually bringing stuff out of the brain to identify us is getting there. But we're not there. And I mean, those things have caused us so many problems over the years. It's not even funny. And they will continue to do so for a while. So that's one part of it. Equally as important, I think, is awareness. You know, and I think that would actually slow down the amount of pain and suffering we see in this industry. And we see that we have caused society as a whole is just bringing up the level of awareness that everybody has or should have. So, you know, I'm doing some stuff with a crew over at Wiser and we're doing awareness training. And, you know, it's 30, 60, 90 second videos to try to get people to just think. To ask another question and to think. And if you think about it, if we could wave a magic wand, to your point, snap fingers and do a Thanos job, having people understand in a digital world that the conversations that they are having with people would not work in a physical world. Ryan last night had an amazing way of putting it. He's like, could you imagine, you know, you get a knock on your door, physical, you get a knock on the door at home. Stood on your doorstep is a Nigerian prince. We'll just use that because we all know the Nigerian 419 scams. Is a Nigerian prince. The Nigerian prince opens his mouth and says, hey, I got an absolute trunkload of money in the back of my car, but you know, I've lost the keys. If you could just lend me a couple of $100, I can go down to the car repair place and just get another set of keys. I'll be right back in 10 minutes. We'd punch him in the face and set the dogs on him. But in the digital world, we hand them that money over and over and over and over again with nearly a thought behind it. So just that simple level of awareness is something I think I would probably wish, possibly even more so than passwords, because we would think of all the child-related issues, and that's why we have Innocent Lives Foundation, because again, we as parents have failed. We have handed our children these amazing devices that are as lethal as a weapon as any other weapon. And we've handed them off with, you know, a packet of freaking cornflakes and said, have at it, enjoy yourself, little Johnny, and don't bother me for the next rest of the day. And yet 10 minutes into this, or not even that, 40 seconds into this, they're being propositioned by sleazy individuals from halfway across the country. So without that level of awareness, you know, we're leaving it wide open. So I think the awareness thing possibly more from a humanity standpoint.
Right. You mentioned Wyzer. I've seen some of their work, really great stuff. Are there other, doesn't have to be products specifically or companies, but are there other things in the security awareness front that you think are doing a good job?
Yeah, I mean, there is actually some great material out there. There's some good companies are putting stuff out. I mean, heck, even like even the feds are putting some decent stuff out there. Privacyrights.org has some good stuff there. Innocent Lives Foundation has a ton of stuff out there on how to prepare your kids. To your point, the Wyzer stuff, I put a post out last week, I think it was, after we did the kids awareness one, and I put a contract out. There's some amazing folks over there, and we basically put it together. It's a 3-page contract between parents and their guardians as to what each party is responsible for in the digital realm. It's stuff like that. And so there's a ton of material out there. Kids and schools, even some of the schools have got their shit together. Most haven't, but some have. So it's just a matter of people paying attention to it. I think that's the big part. We talked about that last night. Yeah, sitting down with Ryan and Evan is just an absolute pleasure. I mean, seriously, it's a freaking treat. So we sat down with those guys last night, and Ryan's topic last night was, you know, analog humans in a digital world. And it's so right. As humans and as kids, we understood the impact of doing something wrong, you know. Don't touch the stove, you'll get burned. What do? We touch the ruddy stove, we get burned. We didn't do it again. But in the digital world, those consequences aren't there. We don't think of it the same way. And somehow or other, we have to re-engage in a way that makes us think of that. And I'm not sure how we do that yet.
I'm thinking there's also this lack of immediate consequences. The consequences are maybe a little bit down the road. They don't happen immediately. Is that, you think, part of it?
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it. Perfect example. We talked about this last night. We shouldn't have to edit this out, but perfect example, dick pics. Okay, let's just talk about that whole phenomenon. Can you imagine being an adult male human and just walking through the shopping mall and deciding that the attractive opposite sex, or even the attractive person of the same sex, I really don't care who you decide you want to choose as attractive, but that attractive person deserves basically you dropping your trousers and going, look at me, right in the middle of a shopping mall. We wouldn't do that shit, because we would get pounced on, we'd get our asses beaten, and we'd end up in handcuffs.
Right.
Yet we figure it's perfectly acceptable to do that online, and you're right, there's no immediate consequences. And you're like, I want a tactile feedback keyboard. I want a keyboard that recognizes you're about to send a dick pic to somebody and basically tases you and makes you think about it.
I'm so glad we got at least one taser reference in. It wouldn't have been a proper Chris Roberts episode without someone getting tased.
That's a good point. Yeah, you do have a good point on that one. I do like, I think I even threatened to, I offered to give it to somebody the other day. Oh, I know what it was. I did the LinkedIn post about the individual running. And I'm like, okay, what's your foresight talking? What's your second sight? And if it doesn't think the right things, you can borrow my damn taser.
Chris, this was a lot of fun. Where can people find you online?
Best place for civilized is obviously LinkedIn. Less civilized is either the Security Shit Show, which is on YouTube, and we've got the blog space set up, and then obviously Twitter. So those are typically the three best places to find me.
And then before you go, can you drop us one solid whiskey recommendation?
Oh yeah, I always gravitate towards my Islas. I mean, let's be honest, it's hard to get away from that. So, I mean, at that point, almost anything from like Ardbeg, Talisker, Lagavulin, or even, you know, yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, God, take it. You know, actually, okay, so if you can get hold of a bottle of Ardbeg Dark Cove, I mean, finding one of those is a pain in the ass. Ardbeg, A-R-D-B-E-G, and it's Dark Cove. It's a limited release they did a couple of years back, and it said like annual release. It's absolutely amazing. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous one. Either that or Silafroig did a 10-year-old a couple of years back, cast strength, the one that was absolutely freaking amazing. And Chieftains, who's an independent bottler, Chieftains got hold of a bunch of casks of it and held on to it for another 4 years. So there's an independent bottling of a 10-year-old that's obviously now a 14-year-old from Chieftains of Lagavulin 14. And it's just, I mean, it's amazing. Just absolutely amazing.
I'm hoping that we get to soon sit down and have a proper drink. But until then, Chris, you are the man. Thanks so much.
No, thank you very, very much. This was fantastic. And yeah, agreed. It would be fun to share a drink. Definitely.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, there is plenty more where that came from over at accesscyber.org. As always, happy hacking and talk to you soon.